Hi everyone, and welcome to Dr. Mommy Speaks podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Rahat. Today's episode is for all those parents who are worried about their child's growth and development. Now, every mom has a constant worry in the back of her mind, whether her child is eating well and growing right or not. We try to map our kids' growth by the portion of food they finish. What we eat doesn't always translate into growth. Well, all we can do is ensure a balanced diet along with good physical exercise and wait for the next checkup where the pediatrician decides whether our child has been growing well or not. Coming to today's episode, it's all about myth busting and clearing all your doubts related to growth and hormonal changes in children. For this, we have with us a special guest who is a dear friend and a pediatric endocrinologist. He has done a specialization in pediatrics, followed by a postdoctoral fellowship in pediatric and adolescent endocrinology. He holds a special expertise in the management of juvenile diabetes mellitus. He is currently practicing as a consultant at various private and government hospitals across Bombay. Apart from being an avid reader and a nature enthusiast, he's also great with kids. Please welcome Dr. Alok Sardesai.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Rahat. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hi, Alok. Welcome to the show. It's so great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Talking of growth hormone is infamous for being the one answer to all your child's growth problems. Now, parents come across this hormone either via WhatsApp groups or some articles or from fellow parents. All they wish for is to somehow augment the growth of their child. So, can growth hormone be given to children who do not have growth hormone deficiency? And is it permissible? But before that, what does growth hormone do?
Growth hormone is nothing but a hormone which is naturally produced in your body. Your pituitary gland secretes growth hormone right throughout life, not just during a growing period, but throughout life. But it has more importance during your growing periods, right from early childhood until your bones fuse. That's the time you need your growth hormone that's the most important time you need your growth hormone for. Now, growth hormone deficiency is an absolute indication. When I say absolute indication, that means it's a compulsion that you have to be on growth hormone. A part of your body is absent. That's why you have to be on growth hormone. But if you are not growth hormone deficient, do you require growth hormone? Yes, there are numerous conditions which are indicated by the US FDA, which are proven, and growth hormone has been approved for the use in these conditions, namely genetic disorders like Turner syndrome or Prader-Willi syndrome, or non-genetic conditions like kidney problems, chronic kidney disease. Even if you do not have such problems and you have a normal growth velocity, your growth hormone levels in your body are normal, still you could be a candidate for receiving growth hormone if your predicted adult height does not reach to your target height. Now, what I mean by that is, whenever you go to a growth clinic or an endocrinologist, he will always measure your parental height. That's called a mid-parental height. What's a mid-parental height? Mid-parental height is an average of your parental height adjusted to your sex of the baby. So if by your bone age, if your endocrinologist feels that your child is not going to reach that particular target, he might use growth hormone to give you that slight push in your centiles that you can, your child can catch up to it and reach your target height. Now, that indication, the indication for such thing is called idiopathic short stature, or ISS. You do not possess a disease, or you do not have any deficiencies. It's just your genetic makeup that is not allowing you to get to your target height. In those conditions, endocrinologists do prescribe growth hormone. It is completely safe. It is completely permitted, but it has to be under the supervision of a specialist. Please do not venture into growth hormone therapy on your own. It has to be done under the eye of your doctor, and it is very safe. But again, it has to be a monitored therapy, and it will have to be on frequent follow-ups while being on growth hormone therapy.
Absolutely, because there are so many ups and downs that can happen in this therapy, and that's a really great thing. It gives us an option of augmenting our child's growth. If in the case of inhibited growth, as you said, that if the child is not able to reach his predicted height.
Yeah. A simple example is many children are born low birth weight. Now, children generally in India, when you say low birth weight, you generally define low birth weight as less than 2.5 kgs. Now, I'm talking about a full-term baby who is less than 2.5 kgs, and we call him small for gestational age or small for the duration of pregnancy. Now, you give your child an opportunity to catch up for the lost weight or the lost length for about 3 to 4 years. But if your child fails to catch up till the 3 to 4 year mark, then it is very less likely that your child is going to catch up after that. So children who are born low birth weight, generally, if they do not catch up till that 4 year mark, 3 or 4 year mark, they will not catch up on their own. And those children require growth hormone to reach their mid-parental height. That is another indication. So many children who are born low birth weight are receiving growth hormone in our clinics, and they're doing pretty well.
So is growth hormone a costly treatment?
It is. To be honest, it is fairly costly. So people find it, people from the lower socioeconomic group typically find it pretty difficult to manage their expenses while on growth hormone therapy. But it can certainly be managed through a lot of funding agencies which help in such problems.
Absolutely. So coming to a little personal story here and going off track, I have two kids, a boy and a girl. Though my little one is my girl, is just 20 months, I still fear the day she gets her menses. Frankly speaking, I hate periods. I feel all girls do. If given a chance, then I would never want it for my little girl to be afflicted by periods. But God and his ways cannot be questioned. The only problem, other than the immense pain, the trouble and embarrassment of blood stains, hormonal changes, the mood changes and all, I feel that these days, girls are too young to be handling periods. It steals them off their childhood. So can you tell us, is it normal to get menses early these days, which is actually the rising trend? And at what age do most girls get their first menses that you've seen in your practice?
And this is a very common question that I've been asked by most parents, that you're normally here. This is normal. My child got her menses at 10 and a half years or at 10 years.
And it's 10 normal. And a half? A lot of
yes. And even earlier. And those parents also say that this is such a common thing in their group, on their class. So many children have attained their menses, and I'm shocked. And they put it up in such a way that it's such a normal thing for them. But oh, it's not. Your menses, getting early menses, is not normal. You're going to be short, period, pun intended. But yeah, you're going to be short. So what happens is, nowadays our population is entering into puberty, the girl population, at 10 and quarter. So somewhere around 10 and quarter, you start seeing breast development, and about 12 and quarter is the time most people are entering, getting their periods. That's the normal time. Now, if you have somebody, a girl who started with breast development less than 8 years of age, now medically it is defined as precocious puberty. You cannot develop breast less than 8 years of age, because you're gonna have your menses soon, at about 9 or 9 and a half, and that's very early. First of all, your child is not ready physically, mentally, and sexually. There are so many physical changes, there are so many mental changes, sexual changes. Your child is not going to understand those. Your child is too small to understand those things. I'm typically talking about menses which occur at about 11 years or so. At 11 years. Now, 11 years is not too early. But what I've seen is, or what we know is that children who enter menses early are ending up on the shorter side. So I think it is very important that you pick up signs of puberty, and if you feel they are occurring early, you should visit your doctor and get it sorted at that place. It's not normal. It's not normal to get menses early. There is a particular time wherein your child should enter puberty and have menses. Prior to that is going to be difficult for your child with respect to her mental status, her final height. More importantly, what happens is once you enter puberty early, you start with your periods early, your ovaries start ovulating early in life. And nowadays you see that people are getting married late and their reproductive life starts even later, probably in their late 30s nowadays, in their 30s or late 30s. Now, if you've started ovulating early, you are wasting a lot of important ova early in your life.
Important
eggs early in your life. And you would probably run out of important ova by the time you want to enter your reproductive life, and could lead to difficult conception. So that's another risk. One more important thing is PCOS. Now, PCOS is something which is very rampant, very common in our population. And it is seen that children who enter puberty early develop PCOS in later life, and children who received treatment for early puberty have lesser risk of developing PCOS or have milder symptoms. So treating early puberty have shown much beneficial results in your subsequent life. The treatment is very simple and it does not have any long-term effects or long-term side effects or any such disturbances in your life.
So the repercussions of having an early puberty followed by an early menarche are huge, from having a reduced fertility window to ending up with PCOS and then again leading to difficult conception, not to mention the mental and the physical trauma that the little one would have to go through. So I guess the most important takeaway of our today's talk would be, parents, please understand what are the signs of early puberty, how to identify them, followed by keeping a track of your child's menses. And if at all you feel your child has any of these red flag signs, then please, please do visit your pediatrician. Start using growth trackers, growth percentile charts, apps, or anything that you want. I will mention all of those in the show notes. And be ready to have even a slightest of hunch if you have it. Get your doubts cleared.
Absolutely. I second that thought. And please use growth charts. Please keep visiting your doctors. Even if your child does not have any complaints, do make a routine visit just to make sure everything is all right. Because what your doctor can see, you might not notice it at an early stage. You might notice it at a very late stage, and you could have run out of time to make any corrective changes. So please be in touch with your pediatrician. Your pediatrician is going to be very helpful to track your child's growth.
Yeah, because in matters of child's growth, once the time has passed, then visiting the doctor is going to be of no good, and the repercussion the child will have to bear. Also, I'd like to bombard you with another very important question. We were speaking of early menses. So what are the factors that cause early menses in girls that can be avoided, other than unpolished polished rice, the most infamous one for that? Other than that, what are the factors?
Basically, it's a lot to do with genetic makeup, a lot of genes coming together and triggering early menses. Secondly, there is something called as EDCs, which is endocrine disrupting chemicals that are present in your food, in a lot of things that you eat, pesticides, your fruits, your milk, your eggs, a lot of things. But those are things you can't do much about. I mean, how can you stop your child from eating eggs or having milk? You can't do much about it. You can go organic, but that's very costly. Not everybody can afford it. So you can't do much about it. All you can do is you can treat your child early. And another cause of your early menses is something wrong in your hormonal axis. Meaning, is there a lesion or is there a problem in your endocrine glands that has started functioning at an early age? Now, that is something scary, and that is something your endocrinologist is most concerned about. So whatever investigations or blood tests or any scans that your endocrinologist is ordering are more towards ruling out any sinister causes of early puberty. So that is one very important thing. Do not neglect any case of early puberty, because in very rare situations it can be something slightly more serious, which will not appear to you, but it is something which has to be taken care of.
So simply put, parents need to be alert at the beginning of pubertal changes, just so that they can avoid tons of these causes that we don't want to know about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, growth has many determinants, like the kind of food we eat, our genetic makeup, how lean or fat our parents are, and even grandparents, hormonal changes at puberty, general environment in which the child is growing up. All of this constitute as a very important part of growth and development. Now, the number one question that I as a physician get faced with is, what should I do to increase my child's height? I mean, what's this perception of a person with good height being beautiful? I feel it's all a psychological construct created by the society. Well, we can't change people's perceptions about it, but we can surely try to break them using scientific facts. So here's an example. If the parents are tall, they expect their kids to be of similar proportions in height. How much of this is true and how much of it is a myth?
Absolutely, yes. So to answer that question, in an ideal case, with an ideal genetic makeup, with ideal environmental conditions and ideal health and ideal everything, yes, the answer to that question is yes, the child will grow as tall as or as short as its parents. But we live in an imperfect world, and this statement is not always true. So coming to genetics, the child inherits some genes from the father, from the mother. But we should realize that the child also has his own genetic makeup, which there are a number of genes which are responsible for his height, his weight, his hunger, his satiety, everything. And if there is a problem, or a variant in those particular genes which are responsible to make him grow taller or grow to his genetic potential, then he will start faltering and he will not grow up to the expected height that we want him to grow to. Secondly, environmental factors, obviously they're not in our hand, but they do play a role in a child's growth. And thirdly, health and nutrition as well. So it cannot be overemphasized that health is going to be a very important aspect, including nutritional aspects as well. Obviously, people who are healthy are going to grow better as compared to the unfortunate people who are not healthier or nutritionally deficient. So there are a multitude of factors which go into the growth of a child, and all these aspects are put together to, you know, treat your child when it comes to endocrinology.
Wow. So hunger and satiety are also genetically determined. That's new information.
Absolutely. Our brain has various centers which are responsible for hunger and satiety. So when you find a child who is eating a lot, you should stop blaming the child and think whether there is a problem in the child, whether his brain is making him eat more, whether his genes are making his brain eat more. So there are a lot of factors which go into the mechanics of obesity and mechanics of stature or growth on the whole. So genetics is a pretty complex subject.
So if we're talking, suppose, of a chubby child who is accustomed to eating a lot, having a hunger that is much more compared to other children of his age, is it suggestive of a disease? Should the parents be concerned?
know whether your child is putting on weight is the first question. Or is he just habituated to eat in between meals? If he's just habituated to eat in between meals, it could just be a sign of boredom, or, you know, he's just on the move. He's not sitting in one place, just looks at something and puts it in his mouth. But if his weight is shooting up at the same rate as he's eating, then you would want to probably probe into why this is happening. Now, there are certain factors in your body which make you gain weight, and then you start eating more. So that's called insulin resistance. You have a lot of fat in your body, which makes your system less sensitive to your endogenous insulin, and hence there is a constant sugar craving or a carbohydrate craving that you have, and you're just not satisfied after a meal. I'm talking about a reverse scenario here. You do not have insulin resistance to begin with, but your genes are programmed in such a way that you do not feel satisfied after a meal. There are so many chemicals, namely insulin and leptin, in your body which make you feel satisfied after you have a meal. Now, in certain unfortunate instances where people, when children are born with genetic defects, with these mechanisms going a bit haywire, wherein you eat a meal and your child does not get a feeling of satisfaction and then asks for a meal immediately after he finishes it, he or she finishes it. So this is termed as hyperphagic obesity, and more often than not is genetic in origin. You would typically see this hyperphagic or increased hunger right from infancy, when the child starts exponentially gaining weight and it's difficult to control with your routine dietary measures, because that's not going to work. You cannot ask your child to eat less because he has a genetic or a functional problem in that aspect. So this needs genetic workup and hormonal treatments to set his metabolism right.
Okay, so that sounds scary, but that would also need to be diagnosed at an early age, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Nice. So boys and girls, they have different growth patterns once they reach puberty. Now, the prime difference being the onset of menarche in girls. Now, what are the various hormonal changes that take place during menarche in a young girl? And what about her physical growth at that time? Is it that her physical growth will cease now once she's reached her puberty? That's what her stature is going to be. That's what her physical, is she still going to be lean if she was to begin with? Or is there a chance that she'll gain weight? How does that work?
Yeah, so puberty is one of the most important landmarks in the growth of a child, because it is, you can call it the last lap of growth. Now, whenever I'm explaining this to my patients, I always use this example of a car racing game. If you've played a car racing game, there's always a button called Nitro Booster. Okay.
Yeah.
So this Nitro Booster, is only available once. You can only use it once in a race. Now, right. Puberty is like that Nitro Booster in your body, which has to start at the right time to give you the correct speed at the correct time. If you use it early, or if it happens early, then you're going to lose out. I mean, you lose the race. By race, I mean you end up on the shorter side. Now, to explain this, growth in endocrinology revolves around bone age and not chronologic age. I mean, you can be a 10-year-old girl, but your bone age can be 12 and a half and 13. And the unfortunate part is that girls grow only till a bone age of 14. And boys grow till a bone age of 16, irrespective of your chronologic age or calendar age. You can be a 13-year-old boy, but if your bone age has reached 16 years, you're not going to grow anymore. So coming to your question of a girl getting into puberty. So puberty generally lasts for a period of 2 years. It generally begins with the onset of breast development, seen as a breast bud on both sides, and it usually lasts for about 4 years and culminates into the onset of menses. Now, puberty is driven by a lot of hormonal changes, particularly initiated by your brain, that's the hypothalamo-pituitary region, and then your ovaries, which start producing the female hormone called estradiol. Now, estradiol is the hormone which is responsible for feminizing your body from a girl to a woman. Now, during this process of feminization, your estradiol also acts on your bones to give it that nitro booster effect, which is going to propel you to your adult height. That's called growth spurt. Now, if you have puberty early, you get the growth spurt early, and unfortunately, you fuse early, your bones fuse early, and you end up on the shorter side. Now, if I have a girl who is 11 years old and she tells me that she's already had her menses, then I'm concerned because I think her bone age has already reached somewhere around 13 or so, which leaves only 1 year of bone age for me to work on her. So it actually depends on what your bone age is. So menses is obviously a time when you have very little growth potential, but it's not always true that children do not grow after menses. It all depends on what your bone age is, but your bone age correlates with your menses better than your calendar age. So if you have this question, whether you're going to grow more, whether you're going to grow at all after you achieve menses, then you should visit your endocrinologist and ask for a bone age. And if there is time, he will definitely help you in getting to a better height that you are, that what you're destined to get at present.
Okay, so that means there's still a chance of getting your height increased in spite of having early menses, right?
Absolutely.
So how is this bone age determined?
So bone age is determined by a simple X-ray of your left hand, which will include Perfect. Your wrist bones and your fingertips. Now there is there are several methods, there are several apps now which can determine your bone age, but the most common and the most frequently used and an old age method of using is the Gulick and Pyle method, which there's an atlas which your endocrinologist possesses, which he will compare your X-ray to the atlas and score. There is another method which is called Tanner Whitehouse method, which is even more accurate as compared to the Gulick Pyle, but it is more tedious. So the best way is get an X-ray done and visit your endocrinologist and check whether you have any more growth potential and can he help you with any therapies to optimize your height.
So again, only if a person is having regular visits with their pediatrician or pediatric endocrinologist, then there's a chance of catching this thing well in time.
Absolutely. Here, I would like to get in the importance of growth charts. Now, the importance of growth charts cannot be overemphasized. Growth charts is one of the basic tools that a pediatrician and a pediatric endocrinologist should possess. Now, your growth should be tracked on right from your birth until you stop growing. That's your charts are right from 0 months to 18 years. Those charts are available, freely available. You can Google it. There are charts published by Indian Academy of Pediatrics, IAP, or CDC charts, WHO charts. There are a lot of charts. And your pediatrician should possess, should have those charts, and you should be, your child's growth should be tracked along those charts. So I'll just explain how the growth charts work like. There are centiles for your height and weight, and as well as your BMI, your body mass index. Now, it's you cannot have one track for the entire population. You live in a population with varied genetic potential. So there are higher centile curves, there are lower centile curves. And as long as you lie within those centile curves, you're all right. But then are you traveling along the same centile throughout your growth period is what is important. Once you start plotting your growth points, you have a tool with you which can point out whether you're faltering, whether you're decelerating on your growth chart, or whether you're accelerating early in your life. So growth chart is something that is going to help you to track your child's height growth much better than just numbers. Numbers do not give you that visual effect that a growth chart gives. Hence, as kids or in school, we were taught the importance of using graphs. Even in presentations, we always teach people to use graphs because it has more visual effect for, better impact. So I think it is using growth charts is a must for early detection of growth failures or even growth related problems, not just growth, weight, obesity, and a lot of those things.
So nowadays, tracking growth is even easier for the children as well. There's a growth tracking tool devised for parents to make it easier to cut all the calculations out and give you direct results. It's by PediaSure, and you can find the growth trackers link on my website in today's episode. Coming to a very typical and cliche thought that I'm sure all of you would have harbored at some point in your life: I didn't grow much because I didn't exercise or cycled enough in my childhood. Now, is this a myth or a fact?
Exercise is going to help you to get to your genetic potential. I mean, if you're destined to grow to 160, exercise and good dietary habits will help you get to 160, but it will not help you to get to 164. It will not increase your height to more than your genetic potential. It is just going to be optimizing your genetic or your own potential to the full capacity. Exercises, typically stretching and cycling, swimming, skipping, these exercises help in a bit of stretch on your bones, which help you to gain your own genetic potential to your full capacity, but it does not add extra centimeters. So if you feel that you're on the shorter side because you did not exercise, that's wrong. You've done nothing wrong. You probably should have been to your doctor and found out if there is cause or a genetic predisposition to shortness or any other deficiency, which could have been treated earlier, and you could have gained a bit of height prior to fusing. So exercise does play a role, but it does not give you extra height and extra centimeters.
So all the shorties out there, if you all are still giving this reason, guys, give it up.
Yes.
So thank you so much, Dr. Alok, for such an insightful session and making the concept of growth for kids so much easier for parents.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and I wish all the best to all those parents who are striving to try and make their kids grow taller. Just visit your doctor if you have any problems. Yes, he's going to sort it for you.
On behalf of the parenting community, I would like to tell you that we are actually obsessed with our kids' growth and development. At some point, it's all about how many centimeters was it this time? How much is the weight increase in this month's visit? That's the primary reason why I decided to do this episode, to clear all these doubts for all my fellow parents out there.
And one measure of caution: in an attempt to make your child nutritionally replete, please do not overfeed him. We are dealing with a pandemic. There is another pandemic, which is called obesity. Okay. Yeah. So we do not want to enter another pandemic of obesity in the next few years. So your child is going to ask for food, and please feed him only when he asks for it. Do not force feed him. We're dealing with a lot of obesity. We're dealing with a lot of diabetes in young age because of the obesity. And it's very disheartening to see that. So we need a strong lifestyle change. Our population really needs to change its lifestyle. And, you know, for example, Saurav Ganguly had a heart attack at this age. Remo D'Souza, the choreographer, had a heart attack at this age. So, you know, we as a generation are predisposed to many non-communicable diseases, mainly cardiovascular diseases like heart attacks. And a major cause is obesity, which is rampant in our kids. So please make it a point that your child engages in some physical activity, has better nutritive, better meals with improved nutritive quality, and please do not force feed your child.
Absolutely. So on that serious note, parents, please do not forget, we are the ones solely responsible for the nutrition of our child. So we are the ones who will be held responsible in future if our kid turns obese because of a sedentary lifestyle, because we bought that Xbox for him, because he said, okay, it's fine. You don't want to play outside. It's okay. Don't go. So keep track of this fact. Guys, you can find Dr. Alok on social media as Dr. Alok Sardesai. And if you wish to connect with him, then you can head to the show notes for all the details. That's it for today. Until then, happy parenting. That's it for today. Do subscribe to my podcast so you will be notified each time a new episode is online. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn as Dr. Mommy Speaks. Don't forget to like and review our podcast wherever you listen. It will help others to find this podcast. And you can visit our website, drmommyspeaks.com/podcast for all our show notes and any resources mentioned by me or my guests. And while you're at it, don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. Until then, happy parenting!